Welcome to Sleeves Rolled Up. I'm your host, Julia Martino. When faced with the serious and complex needs of people in our society, many throw up their hands in exasperation. At the Salvation Army, however, we roll up our sleeves and get to work. In today's episode, I chat to Joel Williams, team leader at Manukau Community Ministries. We talk about how the food bank operates behind the scenes, the logistics of maintaining a steady supply of food, how Joel went from working as a professional chef to working in this area, and his passion for working with an organisation like the Salvation Army that has such a huge impact on people's lives. We hope you enjoy the episode. Kia ora, Joel. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So I'd love to hear more about your role at Salvation Army. So can you briefly share a little bit about what you do?
Sure. So my official title is team leader at Manukau Community Ministries. I work in the food bank. I have a team of three staff and a handful of volunteers and occasional groups of volunteers that come through.
Yeah. What does a day in your life sort of look like? Are you an early riser?
I have a one-year-old child, so I'm up at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Quite often. Typically, I wake up at 6 o'clock. I've checked my phone before seven to try to put out any fires or, you know, somebody might be sick or a volunteer is not going to come in, which is nice when they actually let you know that they're not going to come in.
Yes.
Rock on in to the warehouse somewhere between sort of 8 and 8.30 and just do a quick look around, make sure everything's in order and that there's been no disasters. There's a lot of administrative tasks, making sure things like fire escapes aren't blocked and that the overnight rubbish collection has happened and that, you know, the rain that came through hasn't caused a leak in the roof and things like that. And then it's touching base with my team, who I'm really lucky. I've got a great team. They know what to do every day and they have no problems just getting on with it. But I regularly make sure that they've got the tools that they need and that if they've got any questions around what's going to be going on that day or if they've got any needs in the form of they're going to take some leave or they've got a doctor's appointment or anything like that, that I just regularly check in with them to make sure that they're covered.
So would you spend most of your time on the floor in the warehouse or at your desk? Or like, how do you sort of divide up your time in that sense?
I probably spend maybe about 15% of my time physically on the floor. A solid 50% of my time is spent either at my desk or on the phone, liaising with volunteer organisations, donors, recipients, other TSA staff who are involved in, you know, either referring people through for food parcels or tangi packs and other supports. Yeah. My office is in the food bank, you know, which was something that I really needed to do in order to maintain contact with my team. And to make sure that they have really easy access to me if there's an issue. And the remainder of the time is spent, you know, there's a little bit of networking and schmoozing, if you will, just trying to get supplies and donations and reinforcing our logistics.
So when someone comes to the Salvation Army to get a food parcel, how does that process work? So they just come to the centre during opening hours and then do they get a food parcel that same day? Like, how does that sort of work?
I mean, that's exactly it. You've kind of nailed it. They come to us during the hours that we are open and they say, I need help. And we say, here's some food. It's, you know, it's that simple. And I'd like to make the point that people not having food is not the problem. People not having food is generally a symptom of deeper issues, which is why, you know, the Salvation Army has other wraparound services, everything from financial mentoring to drug and alcohol counselling, housing and all sorts of things like that.
Yeah, so someone's not just going to come and get a food parcel and then be sent away with no offer to help with other things that are going on in their life. It's like a holistic kind of approach. And I think that's how the Salvation Army differs from other food banks, is that we are, you know, set up to be able to provide all these different services that people might need, which I think is pretty special.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, we're vertically integrated in the sense of, you know, that we've got all the services on hand. I would like to think that other food banks out in the community have the ability and the connections and the network to, you know,
refer on if they need to. Yeah, absolutely. So I have a question about how the food gets to the food bank.
So food comes to food banks in one of three streams. Mm-hmm. So there's purchasing, which mm-hmm. is not a lot because
we're a charity.
We're a charity. And, you know, we've got to be responsible mm-hmm. with our money, and we've got to really think about what we're spending it on. Well, there's food donation, which is obvious, and that comes from both private individuals, but not a huge quantity of it, certainly in comparison to the amount that we need to put out.
Yeah.
And some businesses, you know, are quite generous with their donations. Mm-hmm. I'd like to give a big shout out to Wilcox and Sons down in Pukekohe, who have been supporting us with potatoes and onions for decades.
Yeah.
And then there's Food Rescue. Mm-hmm. Now, food rescue is when food is going to end up going to landfill for ultimately, like it's gotten to the end of its shelf life or it's been damaged in a warehouse, like the packaging has been damaged and things like that. And then we end up with it. So we've got strong partnerships with Kiwi Harvest and New Zealand Food Network, who are the logistics providers for gathering the rescued food from New Zealand Food Network and Kiwi Harvest. Get it from the back of Countdown stores, and they do the smaller sort of pickups.
Mm. So the food itself is fine. It's just it might not look pretty, like the pallet's damaged or something.
It's either damaged packaging or it's gotten too close to its best before date.
Yeah, amazing that we can find a use for that food.
It is a shame that in a country that produces enough food for 20 to 30 million people, we're not actually just able to efficiently feed and ethically feed in the form of balanced nutritional food. The 5 million people that we have here, a lot of food that we sell overseas is actually sold cheaper than it's sold on the shelves in New Zealand, which I struggle to wrap my head around.
Yeah, well, I was in the supermarket with my husband the other day. I think it was like pork or bacon or something, and it was from Spain.
Yes.
And it's like, why are we importing all this food when we have perfectly great, amazing food here in New Zealand?
Yeah, and crazy. I know that a lot of that is due to standards, like, you know, and I'm certainly not going to speak ill of Spanish
farming,
it's about scale as well. Like, you know, you can guarantee that Spain produces a lot more pork than New Zealand does.
Yeah.
And so there's going to be an advantage to the economics of scale in that. And so we're not able to challenge that. But the fact that we're not able to challenge that plus the cost of transportation halfway around the world, kind of blows my mind.
Wild.
Yeah.
So how, like logistically, how do you ensure that the food bank has a steady supply of food? So you've mentioned how you get it. So like, is there like a spreadsheet? How do you, because obviously you don't know how many people are going to come in and ask for food. Yeah, so like how does the logistics side of all of that work?
Well, to be fair, we have a fair idea of the number of people that are going to come in because the numbers don't fluctuate wildly.
Okay, they which is actually really sad that it's people are always needing food.
It's a reflection of, I think, two things. One, our system that we live in is not currently experiencing mass chaos. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't we're not suddenly beset by a disaster here or a disaster there. But when we do get, you know, suddenly an impactful event like COVID or the floods, you know, you do see a rapid rise and spike in numbers. But the other aspect is that we've capped our numbers, you know, on the daily basis. Mm-hmm. We've said, look, we have a certain number of people that we can see. We have a group of wonderful workers in the front who talk to the people that come in the door and ask for help and try to find out, hey, what else can we do for you? And that takes time. And it's kind of like a doctor's surgery. You've got a certain number of people that can come through. And at the end of the working day, you've got to sort of close it off for your own well-being and also to purposefully make sure that you've got enough supplies on a daily basis. Yeah. We're in a situation where we're kind of at that limit more days than not.
Okay.
And so because of that, we can predict the numbers. Mm. Now, on that front, we're really lucky. The Salvation Army has set up a really robust system with the Mission Support Warehouse in Mount Wellington, providing bulk food parcels, which form the core of our food provision response. Yep. And my role is to make sure that we have enough donations, rescued food, and purchased things for the things that we cannot get in other ways. Mm-hmm. to provide a rounded, holistic food package to the families that we try to match the Kore Hiakai standard food parcel, which is supposed to be 3 meals a day for 4 days for 80% of the nutritional value. That's probably the hardest challenge. Getting enough calories in the door, not hard. There's enough processed food out in the system floating around that we could get enough calories in the door, but feeding people rice crackers and Kit Kats, it's not ethically right. We struggle with the fresh fruit and vegetables, the meat and the dairy.
Okay.
It's becoming harder as the cost of living crisis and the financial pressures sort of mount.
Yeah.
We're finding businesses are tightening their belt with regards to wastage, with regards to donations.
Mm-hmm.
We're finding that individuals are tightening their belt with regards to donations because they don't have disposable income.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side of things, we're finding demand is increasing.
Because more people are finding themselves in a tricky situation.
Yeah.
So when somebody gets a food parcel, what is in it? Like, is it kind of standard for everybody?
So we have that basic food parcel and sort of that goes out and we go into it at request to remove items if, you know, they specifically say if they are gluten intolerant or if they're dairy free or anything like that. We do try to put into the parcel and into the trolley that we wheel out items that they specifically request if they've got babies in the house and if we have appropriate food and supplies, then we try to put that in. If they have special dietary requirements around religion, if they're, you know, Muslim and they need halal, then we make sure that there's no pork or bacon in the packs. And so we cater to that level and we also try to make sure that there's a balance of food in there, that it's not all carbs or that, you know, there's some things that they can actually make meals from so that there is, you know, is there pasta and tinned tomatoes, for example, that can go well together, you know, to go with the mince that we might be able
That's
to put
right.
in there as well.
Yeah. So actually a lot of thought does go into it. It's not just like chuck a few things in there and she'll be right. It's actually, it's well thought out.
It's reasonably well thought out.
Yeah.
There is a level of chuck it in there with regard to the random donations that we sometimes get in the door, because otherwise we get literally pallets of rice crackers sitting on our floor. So, you know, it's like if we've got a pallet of rice crackers, then everybody's getting some rice crackers.
That's right. Got to get rid of them somehow.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So interesting how all of this stuff works. So I'm just curious how you kind of came to work for the Salvation Army, and did you come from a background working in charities or in food banks, or like, just tell us about how you got here.
My background is a chef,
mm-hmm.
mostly. I've spent most of my working life as a chef in various establishments. I was also in finance for several years and most recently as a project coordinator for a small engineering company. And I suppose my journey towards social work and the Salvation Army started at the beginning of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So a friend of mine and I, we had a business in town serving up the tastiest fried chicken.
Amazing. Love fried chicken.
And unfortunately, COVID came along and really scuppered that. We folded the business and I said, I'm not going to step back into hospitality.
Okay.
Because for me, the writing was on the wall, at least in the very short term, if not medium term, that COVID was going to kind of change the landscape in that respect. And I got my project management qualification, started work for a small engineering company, and then there was another lockdown.
Yeah, Auckland had it rough.
Yeah, I could do a little bit of work from home, but not a lot. Certainly not enough to keep me occupied.
Mm.
And so I was doing cooking of meals and hot cross buns because it was Easter at the time, you know, just helping people out where I could.
Mm.
And I was having a chat with a friend of mine who works for a church in town and they operate a food bank. And he said, I think that you'd get some real value out of going into this sector. And I thought about it. And I saw the role advertised for the Manukau Food Bank.
Yep.
And I said, sure.
Why not?
Why not?
Give it a crack.
My wife and I had just recently bought a house in South Auckland. And so I did. And it quickly became apparent that there is more to filling up your bucket than a paycheck.
Mm.
I've never been more satisfied in the work that I do.
Such a good feeling to have. Yeah. Meaningful work. That's a question that I had was with the kind of work you do, I'm assuming you see a lot of people at a time in their life that's pretty terrible for them. Do you experience people telling you intense stories or really emotional stories? And if so, how do you kind of cope with that, like for your own well-being? And
yes, I get some, you know, there are intense moments of connection with people. There's a gentleman that came through recently. He'd lost his grandson who just, you know, 8 years old, dropped dead on the kitchen floor. Like, you know, and these things can just happen. And he was angry. You know, he's, you know, he's, he was searching for meaning in that. And, you know, he comes to us occasionally for food, and he's volunteered with us before. And he's a genuinely lovely guy, but to see him hurting and to sit down with him for a couple of hours and just be there and listen, which was what he needed, because there are no answers. So, you know, that was intense. That's an extreme example as far as, you know, an emotional moment, but it's on the spectrum. And, you know, we get stories like that every day around situations that you can't imagine, you know. I mean, I didn't grow up by any stretch of the imagination rich or well off, or, you know, raised for the most part of my life with a, you know, single mum who tried her very best to put food on the table and clothes, but I never experienced the hardship that I hear about daily that some of these families are going through. And so dealing with that is... it's hard. Humor, you know, unfortunately, is a defense mechanism. Therapy, you know, I advocate everybody should see a therapist at least once in their life, you know, because you can get tools to help you, you know, breathing techniques, mindfulness, prayer, just practicing being open with your emotions. Really good. I have amazing management. At Manukau, I have a great team. There's a really good environment because we're all going through it together.
That's right. Yeah, at every step of the way, people are encountering these hard situations that you're hearing about.
And so for anybody witnessing difficulty and hearing stories that are challenging their emotions, I would encourage them to reach out, because they would be surprised at how many people around them would be willing to just listen and support them, you know, and get a coach. You know, have a coach. Somebody that, you know, once in a while you can talk to, and they can be like, okay. How do you want to proceed? What do you want to do about that? You know, and, you know, it helps give you perspective. And I think that's my biggest thing, is that I'm able to look at my own life and be super thankful around my health and my circumstance, my family, you know, hearing stories from migrants, and I'm real happy I live in New Zealand.
Yeah, we're so lucky here.
You know, for all of our problems, I'm like, you know, 2 seconds on you know, 2 seconds on the news, and you know it's better here. So I'm really thankful for that.
Our neighbours that we live next to are from Myanmar, and they came to New Zealand with absolutely nothing. And some of the stories that they've told us is just, it's crazy. Like, we just don't know how good we have it here. Just safe, and even like the this is kind of getting off topic, but like that we have nice roads to drive on. I know we all whinge about the pothole that's down our road, but it's like we are, are so blessed here.
It doesn't have tank shell.
That's right.
Sort of
that's
holes.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
I've got a friend of mine, and she grew up in the Cambodian Civil War, and you know, she's got stories about just being on the back of a motorbike and dodging bullets, and it's like,
how is this real life?
Right? It's a video game. Crazy. It's a movie.
Yeah.
To us.
Doesn't seem real. No. Yeah. Yeah. No, we're so incredibly blessed here. Can you think of a story off the top of your head that sort of highlights the impact that Salvation Army can have on an individual? Like, I know you've sort of talked about that we're able to walk alongside people and chat to them, but is there sort of one particular instance that really stands out to you?
How long have you got? I've got.
We've got time.
there's people every day that come to us with success stories, I suppose. Mm. Where we've been a small part of that journey. I mean, I'd like to just point out that when it comes to people changing their circumstance, it's no external force or influence or body or organization that will have the biggest impact.
Yeah.
It's them.
Yeah.
You know? So for the people that walk through our door every day and ask for help, that's the bravest thing that anybody can do.
Yeah.
Is to say, I need help.
Yeah.
And so I'd really like to congratulate everybody that does that. Mm. We recently had a lady come talk to us at Manukau, and she's been getting help from us for a while. She used to live in a car with her kids, and she's now in a house.
Amazing.
She's got a job. She's had a promotion. She is thriving. And, you know, she's on track to getting debts under control. Mm. A large support in that has been the food parcels, you know, not having to spend an ever-increasing amount of money on buying food. You know, and she's living humbly. I mean, you know, our food parcels aren't filled with foie gras and,
no.
you know.
It's the basics, right?
Yeah. So, you know, she's, you know, taken the brave step of asking for help and secondly, been humble enough to accept that help and move in a forthright manner to improve her place in life and her kids. You know, their trajectory now is so much more improved because of the actions that she's taken. So there are people like that every day.
That's so incredible. Like, it is so hard to ask for help, even if you know you really, really need it. And I think it's concerning to see as well the number of people that would like be classed as middle class. So you'd think, you wouldn't need, they'd be fine, you know, double income, own their house, I don't know, like all of the right things. And they're finding themselves in tricky situations and it's like, it can happen to anybody. There's just a few little disasters away, a few unexpected bills, maybe one of you loses your job or hours get reduced and then you're in a really tricky situation. So yeah, totally asking for help is, a very important first step.
And we never know that we don't know the demons that haunt people.
Mm.
You know, you look at people and you think they're fine. We look at celebrities and think they're fine.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later in the tabloids, it's like, oh, they're off to rehab or, you know, they've broken up with their relationship. Yeah. And it's like, I thought their lives would be amazing. Mm. And it's like, no, they're just like the rest of us. They've got huge issues.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what the Red Shield appeal this year was trying to portray. We had this imagery of like someone at the checkout. A woman at the checkout, and then next to her was like a grayed out image, and it was showing like she looks like she's fine paying for her food, but actually on the inside she's wondering, is this payment going to go through? You know, how am I going to feed my daughter? And it's like you just said, everyday people are going about their lives. We think they're fine, but there's so much going on under the surface. And I think that's what I love so much about the Salvation Army's work is we're able to deal with the immediate issue in front of us or the person, but then also, how can we take steps to improve your life long term, like that lady you were just talking about. Now she's in her house and she's got a job, even a promotion. Like that's true, incredible life change. And it's really special to be part of. So I would love to know, in your experience as a food bank team leader, how's the perception of people receiving food parcels changed over the years? Because I know some people have a sort of, oh, they didn't manage their money well, they're just lazy, whatever it might be, these sort of negative perceptions. So yeah, I don't want to chat a little bit about that.
I certainly can't speak to a long history.
Mm.
I've only been
a few years, I guess.
I've only been here 18 months. But I suppose the stories I've heard tell me that, first of all, there's never increasing number of people accessing food banks. Mm. That's supported by the data. And there is and there has been stigma associated with receiving a food parcel. Mm. You know, people can feel shame and embarrassment around not being able to stand on their own two feet, as some people might say.
Mm.
But as a communal and collective society, we haven't evolved ever to be lone wolves and individuals. And I think that's something that we've forgotten, or we've been lied to, we've been conned since the, I don't know, 60s or 70s when, you know, people were told you can go out and you can be a success on your own, you know, go out and get what you need, what you deserve. And it's like nobody ever said, go out and help other people have what they should have, you know? I mean, what we all need.
Yeah, that's right. The good basics of life, roof over their head, I don't know, some employment.
Yeah, so. I mean, we go to the shops and we see all the, you know, self-help books.
Yeah.
You know, how to make $1 million, how to, you know, how to be more charismatic, how to do this, how to do that. But we never see any books on how to help other people.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of one of the main drivers behind why it's been a problem for people to receive help. And we're moving into a more thoughtful era where people are talking about it. You know, I mean, tools like podcasts, you know, and, you know, an openness to things like therapy and counseling, a more social framework, a willingness to ask for help, and a lack of judgment around reasons why you shouldn't be asking for help.
Mm.
I think that even we struggle with it on the front line.
Yeah.
You see people come through and you're like, why don't you have a job? You're young, you're fit, you seem
got
perfectly.
Everything going for you, sort of.
You look fine. But again, going back to you don't know what demons plague people.
Yeah, mental health plays a huge part, right?
They might have a sick family member at home. You know, they've had some recent tragedy befall them that means that they are not able to integrate into society in the way that you judge they should.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, based on your experiences.
You know,
yeah.
And we aren't those people, and we have no right to impose our individual value structure on them. Collective value structures, that's a different different conversation. But I think that we are moving into a more thoughtful space in food provision, and that soon there will be a tipping point. I mean, I'm seeing the amount of food that we have access to get smaller and smaller, and yet there is more and more food out there.
Mm.
I think we're going to get to a point where there will have to be a call to action for doing the right thing and feeding people, you know, the food that they need and not putting it behind a paywall that is getting more and more expensive as, you know, people fall further and further behind.
Yeah. This isn't strictly related to what we're just talking about, but yesterday I saw a video, and I don't know how old it was. It was like on the Q&A segment of, I think it's like TV1 or something. And it was talking about young Pacifica students who are working like 30 to 40 hours a week, as well as going to school to provide for their families and to help their parents out. And like they're buying their own school uniforms and all of these things. But they're talking about how it's a privilege to do that. Then they shared this story, which really got me. And it was about like your own, like judging people and the negative perception you have. And it was a girl who did cleaning with her family. She worked 7 p.m. till 7 a.m. And then she had an NCAA level 3 English exam that she had to do. And she was so tired that she grabbed like a bit of refill, like a pad of refill paper, but it had like stuff cut out of it. It was kind of unclear in the interview exactly what the problem was with it, but the exam supervisor saw it and assumed she was cheating and kicked her out of the exam. And so then she failed her level 3. She wanted to study law, and now she's working at Rainbow's End because she can't get in because she failed because of the someone jumped to a conclusion about it. But this is like an extremely hardworking person, and it's just, it really hit me. You just, like you've just said, we just don't know what's going on with people's lives, and a little bit of compassion and giving people the benefit of the doubt can really go a long way.
Yeah, and I think that if we all did our best, then the world would be a better place.
Mm.
I heard something the other day that said, it's easy to do what's right, but it's also easy to not. And so I will try to never judge people for not doing the best that they can do, because I certainly know that I haven't done the best that I can I can do always. You know, we strive to do the best we can, but when we fall short, well, the best thing that we can do is just to pick ourselves up and try again.
Exactly.
There's a lot of really old wise adages that I think growing up I was always like, oh, that's a hokey phrase.
Yeah.
You know, these things that you old folks say.
Yeah.
You know, but now as I get older and more mature and I have more perspective, you know, I go like, dude, there's some wisdom there.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, take that on board.
Yeah, for all you folks out there that are younger than 40, listen to your parents.
Yeah, that's right. They've been around the track. I don't know if that's the right saying.
Several laps in some
Several
cases.
Several laps, that's right. Yeah, listen to them for sure. So if you're listening to this podcast and you feel inspired to help out or to donate, we would obviously really appreciate that. You can go to our website, salvationarmy.org.nz, and go to the, I think it's called How to Help tab, and you can set up a donation, or you can also donate through the Food Bank Project, which is just foodbank.org.nz. I'll also link all this information in the show notes as well. But before we finish up, Joel, is there anything else you wanted to mention?
I would like to share an inspirational phrase from my wife.
Amazing. Let's hear it.
So every now and again, whenever I fall short of my expectations or her expectations, whenever she has colleagues that fall short, or whenever something is not as good as it could be and you wish for it to be better, she says, do better.
Classic. I love it.
It's the most succinct piece of life advice that I could possibly share.
Yeah.
Do better.
Wise words from your wife. Thanks so much for joining us today, Joel. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Sleeves Rolled Up, a podcast by the Salvation Army. For more information on what we covered in this episode, see the link in the show notes.